Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League! Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham flick, and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet, and it's come from the middle!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's Most Dangerous Tottenham Hotspur Podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio. I'm your host, Greg, and we are back from our international break, which is largely caused to our schedules being a little busy last week. So we hope you didn't miss us too much. I'm guessing after the Fulham game you didn't, but we're here to talk about that and some other Spurs stuff today. Before we get into it, I want to remind you to follow us on Twitter at WDR Podcast. That's WDR as in Wheeler Dealer Radio. And go leave us a five-star review on iTunes or Spotify because, you know, I think we deserve it, or if we don't, that would be very nice of you. So joining me this week is one of my regular co-hosts. It's Ben Daniels coming to us from Atlanta, where I assume he's been spending the last week trying to drink memories of this match away. Ben, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing okay. It has been a gloomy few days here in Atlanta, raining, and you know, it really suits the mood, I think, for what we're about to talk about. We gave you guys a week to forget about how terrible this was, and now you can dial in to remember all the pain and sorrow.
And for our non-existent Patreons, we have an edition of this podcast with Dashboard Confessional in the background to match the weather and mood of everything going on. Now, I promise we won't be too depressing, and we won't talk about Fulham for the entire podcast. Unfortunately, Brian Ashlock couldn't be here this week because he had food poisoning from oysters, and because podcast is a visual medium, I was definitely doing air quotes there. So yeah, unfortunately Brian couldn't be with us this week. Hopefully when he's dried out, he will join us again next week for a better game to talk about against Luton. So Ben, I thought I was a little struck after this Fulham game just how over the edge a lot of at least the Spurs people online that I consume were, between, you know, our writers room and Twitter, you know, as the foremost bedwetting Tottenham Hotspur podcast. I don't know, how concerning did you find this game?
I think I found the game itself concerning. I think the thing that has people freaking out is that it always feels like two steps forward, one step back. You know, we just cannot put together a consistent run. You know, we look at our recent match history, and every time we string together a couple wins and it looks like we're on the right path, we have a real calamitous dumpster fire against a Brighton or a Wolves or now Fulham. And it's just like, why do these banana peels keep happening? Because generally they're not strong performances that go a little awry. They're just a dog shit day at the office out of nowhere. And especially to follow up, you know, the top four, 6-pointer against Aston Villa, where we finally put a team to the sword. We finally looked like, okay, everyone's back. We know how to do this. We're good. We're going to seize the, you know, final stretch of the season and put our stamp on, you know, where we want to be. To go to Fulham of all fucking teams and just utterly collapse like that is worrisome.
I think that's part of it, because it's what you said. It's Fulham. Like, Craven Cottage is a warm, fuzzy place to go. It's like full of away fans who are having a nice day at not even away fans. It's full of like tourists having a nice like day out in London. It's not supposed to be a hard fixture. I think, and this is not to excuse the performance, that this is a deceptively hard match these days. Like, I think Fulham are better than we give them credit for. But historically, it's exactly what you're talking about. Like, this is a team we should roll over and get 3 points out of. You know, and arguably we should have done that anyway. But my point is, historically, this has been, I think, a little easier maybe than it has been this year.
I mean, Fulham are not a very good team. You know, they are firmly in the bottom half. I mean, I guess flirting with the top half, but like, they have put together a recent decent run of form. They're not so good that I think they're like, you know, they're not a Brighton or a West Ham even. Like, there's not a real banana peel team. Like, they're a team we should be beating if we have aspirations.
I just don't think they're maybe the pushover they used to be, if that.
I mean, look, they're like the Bournemouth Crystal Palace level of pushover. They're the Chelsea level of pushover. You know, they're not, they're not, you know, the real dog shit. They're not Forest or Burnley or Sheffield United or, Luton that are like really propping up the table, but they're not good. And, you know, yeah, I guess there's no easy away days in the Premier League, you know, with the money involved, but it's still, again, a game we should have won.
It is. And you know, I think to me, because there was all this panic and like, I feel like something that unifies all strains of football fandom, at least online, is this desire to sort of extrapolate small sample sizes or what you're watching that week into a conclusion. And I talked about this, I can't remember which game after it was, but like, it is like you see something and you want to like, especially in a game like this where there's like, okay, there's one injury affecting our lineup, but you know, compared to recent months, this is a pretty full strength Spurs squad. We had a lot of options on the bench in this match, but there's just this, like, whether you're a banter merchant, whether you're an old man complaining about how woke Spurs are, whether you're a numbers nerd, it's like everyone seems to want to like watch a match or two and just be like, okay, well, look how Spurs played in this. Ange has been found out, and like sort of take it from there. Or, you know, conversely, there's, you know, people, I guess, like instituting calm. I mean, just saying like it's going to be fine if you look at these things. I don't know. I watched this match. To me, like, you know, I sort of know, like, you know, I've watched enough Spurs over the years that, like, you know, I sort of know what I feel like I know what, like, fraudulent performances smell like and what a bad day at the office smells like. This felt to me like much more of a bad day at the office where we didn't have a good game plan. We had a big deficiency with Dragosin not being able to pass sort of on the left-hand side of the pitch. And Fulham was playing well. Fulham had a plan that worked, and we just weren't. You know, our performances were, it felt to me like a bunch of things just, we weren't doing things well, Fulham was doing things well, and then just other shit just stacked on it all day, and it was just a bad day at the office for us. Which isn't to say there aren't things to learn out of this match, but I don't think this is like an indictment of Spurs. It is frustrating this happens like a week after probably our most complete performance of the year, but also like, you're not really a Spurs fan if you didn't see this coming.
Yeah, I think I even joked about it last week or 2 weeks ago, whenever the pod was. I think the thing that people are pointing to and the reason they're drawing such sweeping conclusions from every individual match is, like I said before, is we don't have that consistency to point to. So there's not a trend where we can say, oh, well, this is a blip because here's what the trend is. It's like it's so up and down that there is no trend. There's just the only trend that is consistent is this inconsistency. And that to me is kind of the concerning thing, is it's like either we're firing on all cylinders for enough of the match that everything goes well, or we can get the result by playing only a half of really effective football, or things don't go well and we just have nothing to offer. And I think it's easy to catastrophize based on that because, you know, I think it's unrealistic to think, well, we're going to just have everything go right and things are going to click for 38 games of the season. And if that's what it's going to take for this team to actually be good, we're not going to muddle through some games to some hard fought, undeserving points. You know, is this ever going to work as a viable long-term project? I think that's like kind of where people's heads, maybe not intellectually, but like, I think that's sort of what this season is sort of giving the impression for people.
And I think like you want to go back and look at like other managers' first seasons, like Pochettino's first season, like, which again, not a finished product, a lot to be desired. AVB's first season, a lot more promising than it turned out, still something to be desired. And it's like, I think it's a mixture of, you know, we sort of lived through that stuff, so you're trying to figure out where you're going to end up, which is natural, but also this like, you know, like, not wanting, you know, I joke all the time on this podcast about how, like, you know, I treat a lot of our old managers like exes, and it's like, you know, you don't want to get burned again. You don't want to, like, you know, you don't want to get invested in a guy who's not figuring it out. I think generally, like, the standard of play, even for all the ups and downs that we've seen this year, has been strong enough that, like, it's easy to be encouraged. In fact, I would say, like, this game is, I think, I mean, I guess it depends on how kind you want to be about the Villa game, but like, I think this game is maybe the biggest aberration we've had in a while. Like, I mean, the Brighton game is the last time we played this badly, and I think I might be missing something. Maybe the Wolves match, but even that was a little different. You know, I think this is like, this is the worst we've played in a minute, and I take some comfort in that, but there are issues we need to sort out.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not personally catastrophizing. And I think, you know, if you want to care about a sports team, then investment is the name of the game. Like, that's what it means to be a fan. You throw yourself in and you believe in something until that belief burns you so badly that you regret most decisions you've ever made in your life. Like, that's what it's all about. You know, I know we've all been hurt before, and I think it's easy to want to like hedge that emotional vulnerability and not commit to Ange because you see some worrying signs, but like, that's no fun either to just kind of be checked out. I mean, I think we've been checked out on some degree or another for the last like 3-4 years under previous managers who, you know, either burned us or, you know, were never worth investing in the first place. I think for all the ills that we've suffered under Ange's regime, there's still so much there to be positive about and so many bright spots and so many fantastic performances that, I mean, just be willing to be hurt if it goes bad.
And I think that's what makes this game stand out, because you want to go back. Let's look at like some bad performances. The first Brighton match this year, like we kind of could have won that or at least drawn that at the end. Like, I mean, as bad as we were, Brighton really let us into that, and we were playing well for the last like 20 minutes. Like the Wolves game, like we were well on top before we conceded 2 dumb goals. I mean, we were playing well in that match for long stretches. I mean, again, this is one of the only matches of the season, certainly the only match where we had a full bench for like we weren't really depleted in terms of personnel, where like you could just look at it and be like, God, that was dog shit. Like there's not a lot to feel good about. And you know, there are, you know, we created some chances later on. We sort of, when we finally made some subs late in the match, we kind of got our act together, but it's hard to know how much of that's like Fulham's up 3-0. They're going to take their foot off the gas. But, you know, I think that's what's really striking about this match is like the relative lack of positives to virtually every match this year.
Right. And I think that is another thing that makes it easy to, you know, bedwet is how did this game of all game be the match that we were just played off the park, created very little, handled very comfortably, and, you know, scored on freely by a Fulham team that is, you know, in the bottom half of the table. That is concerning. Like, that shouldn't happen.
So what between, because I think there's a difference in this match between things that didn't go well, you know, where like, I think the way we set up, you know, is sort of the way Fulham set up, it just didn't go well. And what do you think? So there's that. What are you actually concerned by coming out of this match? Like what from a, like beyond a just Spurs had a bad day at the office, like what going forward actually worries you, or at least do you want to see us address?
Yeah. I mean, I think what worries me about the way we set up, not just against Fulham, but it's how we set up in general, and that either works or doesn't work, is that early phase of buildup. We're really good when we can move the ball forward quickly. We're really good when we can counterattack. We're really good when we can press high up the pitch and win turnovers and create chances from that. We're just so ponderous building out of the back. And I think this was a game where Fulham did a very good job of funneling us into the areas of the pitch where we don't move the ball particularly well. They were on Bissouma and Sarr very aggressively. You know, they're the guys who should be collecting that first pass from the center backs. You know, you talked about Dragosin being a problem on the left. You know, you could see before the fullbacks tuck into midfield, there are opportunities to play that early ball out wide, or also to play the ball early further forward up the pitch to Johnson or Werner or Kulishevsky or whoever's over there. And you could see Dragosin just being so slow because the ball, he's so right-footed. When the ball comes into him, he can't just open his body and play a quick left-footed pass out to the guy who's open on that side of the pitch. He has to turn like a very slow ship in a Baltimore Harbor. sorry, Greg.
Ouch.
And by the time he got his body set to like make that right-footed pass out there, Udogie had either gotten a marker on him or had already started moving into midfield, or, you know, it was just too late. And so he was a particular cog that was a problem for his own personal limitations. But the rest of it was kind of this structural problem where we just don't have options when we compress the midfield and they're compressing the midfield against us. There's just no one there to receive a ball, and we just can't build through the middle of the pitch. And again, our wingers are not good enough at, when we can hit them quickly, beating a man and starting something on their own. They go backwards to that same congested midfield, and we struggle. And this has just been consistent for weeks now.
You mentioned two players there, and I think they're the two play. I think they're in both in their own ways endemic of what went wrong in this match, because Sarr had, to me, had a bad day at the office. I think Sarr is capable of playing better than this and just did not play well that day. I don't think this is like, maybe you disagree with me, but I don't think it was like, this is an indictment of what he can and cannot do. He seemed to me to have a bad day at the office, even though there's, you know, he has his limitations or whatever. But Bissouma, on the other hand, is like, again, there's enough of a body of work there where I'm starting to get like, apparently Bentancur has like a fractured toe or something, which might explain why he hasn't been starting. But like, I'm very, like, I know sort of sixes are hard to find in the market right now, but like, I'm very, like, I don't want Bissouma to be our in our first 11 anymore. Like, I think he's a great player to have on your team, especially for depth, but like, he's been too, like, he was like playing in the form of his life for those first 10 matches this year. And I don't know what happened after that, but like, right now, I think he's too much of a liability to be like, or at least like too much of a liability for us not to try to upgrade it in the summer, because he only seems to play well under certain conditions. He is a real liability too often, I feel like, you know, his inability to transition the ball, to get open, to pass. Yeah, I don't know. It's just not working with him right now.
It's weird because, you know, one of the notable aspects of his game early on was he would receive the ball, was very press resistant. He would dribble forward and he would create space for himself, and he would link up with Udagi and Madison. And that little triangle between the three of them was where so much of our early production came from. And that has just vanished. He looks completely uncomfortable when he gets the ball under pressure. He makes these safe passes back to the center backs or plays it to somebody else who's nearby, but puts them under pressure immediately because, again, it's a crowded midfield with everybody standing there and all of their markers coming with them. He doesn't seem to understand how to get and create space for himself and for his teammates to open the pitch up and to move the ball. I just don't know where that went. Sarr was bad for different reasons. Like, I think he was suffering the same problems, and as a result, forcing it too much and playing a lot of wayward passes, a lot of, you know, optimistic passes, I'll say charitably, that just didn't find anybody.
Yeah. Whereas it seemed like he was trying to make it happen and just not, like, he was pressing. Like, it felt like he was pressing.
Right. And, you know, if you're going to make a bad pass, have it go 40 yards so you can reset. Don't make a bad 5-yard pass that puts Sarr under pressure and then his pocket gets picked and then they're coming at us. And that was this sort of the difference. Like, they were both terrible with the ball, but the stuff Bissouma was doing was creating a lot more problems for us all the time.
And I feel like with Bissouma, it's been more of a pattern than with a guy like Sarr, for instance.
Right, who just last week, you know, was good.
Yep.
It's
fighting an injury. He got, like, fighting back issues right now. So, like, you know, I don't know. It's like, to me, like, I think you're right about some of our issues in fullback buildup. I think some of that's teams adapting to us. Some of that's, like, Udogi's a really young player. And I think having a guy like Dragosin, who is just not having a great day passing from the left, I think that just, like, exacerbates all the issues he might have. But, like, to me, the big endemic issue out of this game is, like, we got to do better than Bissouma. Like, I mean, he is just, like, hamstringing us right now. It's really a problem.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree. And I think Højbjerg came on and looked better. You know, and everybody loves to hate Højbjerg, and I think he is not without his deficiencies, but if Bentancur is crippled and Bissouma is playing like this, it's worth a shot to see what he has to offer. Because, you know, the other thing, not about this game but long term, is Bentancur and Bissouma are both entering the final years of their contract. They're both on the older side of our squad, and Højbjerg is going to be out of contract. So we really need to know what's worth keeping around there and what we need to buy for. I don't know if like doubling down on Højbjerg for the future is like the answer. I mean, I think we do need to buy. Yeah, I think we do need to buy someone long term. But I don't feel great about extending either of these guys to be a long term member of the squad on the recent evidence. Like, I mean, I'm more charitable towards Bentancourt because he's had some injury problems and whatever. But the flip side of that is he's getting older and he's had a lot of injury problems. Like, you know, there's concerns there. And I don't know. It's a very problem position in a way that I, you know, if you had asked me this in September, I would have said, like, great, we're well sorted. Basuma's amazing. And we got Bentancourt coming back and everything will be fine. And now I think besides like a great winger, that's like our number 1B important position to sign.
And there's been some rumors. I think we're being heavily with, was it Ederson out of Atalanta? But, you know, like, I think Basuma is a good guy to have as, like, the second guy who could play that position in your midfield. I think you could do a lot worse than that. Now, whether or not he's happy with that or what we have to pay him for that is another matter, but especially when you're going to be in, like, four competitions, one of which might be the Champions League, like, I think you could do a lot worse, but I do think you need to upgrade there. Again, I'm like you. I still sort of, like, lean towards we should extend Bentancur. But that's just because when he's healthy, he's so good. But you're right. He's had a ton of injury issues. He's getting older. Is that something to be worried about? I don't know. My gut is we should keep him around because he's just so good when he is good. But I don't know. It's going to be a challenge for this club. But, like, to me, Basuma is just at this point where, like, he's having issues and there's no excuse. At least that we don't know of any excuse. Because he seems like he's healthy. And it's just, like you said, the things he was doing well, he's not doing well anymore. And it's becoming a problem. For us, and a game like this really highlighted it.
I think the other thing I would be interested in seeing is Ken Sarr play as a six, because we know we can tuck Kulishevsky into that second midfield spot, at least against, you know, only okay teams. But I think if you get a midfield of Sarr, Kulishevsky, and Madison, that might be, you know, a little light defensively, but it might allow us to hold on to the ball and move the ball way more effectively if Sarr can do like kind of the minimum levels of, you know, defensive breaking up play work. And like, he's shown that like he has that to him, just not as his dedicated role.
Yeah. I mean, you can certainly cover the ground required. I mean, you know, I don't want Kulishevsky in the midfield as like an ongoing concern. I think it's a neat trick. But like, you know, I would rather have him playing on the right and have actual midfielders in there, at least if everyone's healthy. But yeah, no, I think it would be interesting to see what Sarr can do back there. But he has been, you know, he's been really good further forward this year. So I'm not sure, like, how much do you really want to mess with success, you know?
I mean, the thing about Kulishevsky is, you know, he's not so good on the right that it's like an automatic pick. And especially with Richarlison coming back, it's going to mean, you know, how do we get our best front four on the pitch? And for Charleston going back up top, Son going back to the left, and Johnson going back to the right kind of makes sense, especially if Kulishevsky can plug a hole in midfield and Sarr can plug a hole further back. Like, you can kind of see how that maybe gets your best 11 bodies on the pitch, whether it's the best structural shape, whether, you know, they are square pegs and round holes. I don't know, but our round peg right now is Basuma, and he is not.
These are also different problems next year than they are this year. But you're right. We have to get through this season before we get to next season.
Right. Yeah, the question of who's our long-term six, I don't know that Sarr is our answer or Kulishevsky is our long-term eight. I'm not saying that, but we've got two problems, and one of them is now. And Basuma is a problem that needs solving now.
Yeah. So generally, so where is the pendulum on Spurs as we go into the Luton match?
I mean, it's... I still think, you know, Ange is a good coach with a system that works well when it works. I am willing to extend him the credit that he can fix the problems. Maybe it's going to take another transfer window to get there, but, you know, I'm not ready to cut bait by any means.
It's funny because, you know, you watch that match, I want to say by the 30th minute, Spurs fans were calling for changes, which like probably should have happened, certainly at halftime. But there is something to be said for, like, Ange was sort of alluding to it. I think it's like these guys need to figure it out. I think you can see in some of his post-game comments, that's why he was leaving them on. But Also, I think like every manager in the world is like far more reluctant to like blow it up in the middle of a match than like we as fans are. And I wonder if there's something to that. Like, because I do think there's an element of like we needed to change the personnel on the pitch, but also there's no excuse for what was the players who were on the pitch playing as poorly as they were.
Absolutely. And I think if you're the manager, you believe in your system, you believe in your coaching, you believe in the guys you've chosen to play this match. And, you know, if you're good enough, you should be able to play your way with your guys and it should work. I think where that ethos kind of falls apart a little bit is for once in our lives, we have a real bench full of guys who, you know, are only on the bench because Ange made certain lineup decisions, not because they're obvious bench players. You know, Timo and Richarlison have been very good recently. Bentancur is perfectly interchangeable with Bissouma. It's not like, you know, these are Brian Heal and Dane Scarlett type substitutions where it's like, yeah, I get why you trust your guys over rolling the dice on something like this. This isn't a dice roll. This is just other starting 11 caliber players who happen to not be starting. And maybe they have skill sets that might give you something now that the game is in play and things aren't going well that could change things for the better. And like, that's where I'm frustrated. It's like, see what's happening and see why your game plan isn't working and recognize that somebody else might be able to execute that same game plan a little differently that works.
It's just like, I don't know. It's like, you don't know where to be frustrated because you're pissed off at the players and you're pissed off at the manager, but it just is what it is, I guess, at that point. I want to transition to some questions. I think this match gives us a really good opportunity to get into this one. What is the angriest Tottenham have ever made you? Because I've seen you very angry because of Tottenham Hotspur before. What is the angriest Tottenham's ever made you?
Firing Jose before a cup final.
Really?
No, I'm just kidding. That, okay. That was the happiest it ever made me. I was so happy not to play that game with that fucking guy in the dugout.
Yeah, I really wanted to win that one without him. Just the... God, that would
have been Ryan Mason not starting Tanguy and Ndombele in that cup final. That's the angriest Tottenham made.
Yeah, well, you know, whatever you want to say about Ryan Mason, clearly he knows ball to some extent. So
That's why we won that game.
Yeah, well, we didn't lose it by more than one. So I don't know. So what? Because I've seen you. I think we were watching. God, was it? It was the West Ham match where basically Seal, it was like, was it right before we lost to Newcastle the Leicester year where we were trying to finish above Arsenal? We were watching that together and you got incredibly angry when we conceded some stupid goals in that match. I'm sure it's not the angriest Spurs have made
you. I'm always angry when Spurs do something stupid or lose.
You and Mark Ruffalo, just angry all the time.
Yeah.
So what is the angriest Spurs have ever made you?
That's hard to say.
I mean, given your relationship, I have to imagine it involves Arsenal.
No, I don't think so. I think I'm much angrier about stupider shit than I am like losing to a real team. I think, okay, the Arsenal thing that made me the most angry was Adebayor getting a red card and us blowing that match and losing 5-2 after going 2-0 up or 2-1 up. That's the angriest I've been during an Arsenal game. I think that's my Arsenal answer. What's yours?
So what's your general? I'm like, my Arsenal answer is like for Arsenal games in particular, it I'm probably misremembering. Whenever they equalized in that North London derby, I want to say it was the year we were trying to beat Leicester in the league where Kane scored that, like the best goal he ever scored, that sideways goal. And it was like, it felt like we had a chance to win the league and we pissed away 2 points. I want to say it was Sanchez who scored for Arsenal. And B, it was like, I don't know. It was like, God, we outplayed them. We scored, like Harry Kane scores a goal like that. We fucking deserve to win this game. And it really felt to me, and I think it was proven true, like Arsenal was kind of on the decline at that point, and they fucking managed to like salvage a draw. I remember being pretty angry about that because there were stakes and because it wasn't just like you know, like, I mean, it's easy. Like, it's, I understand why you're angry at Adebayor, but like, you know, that game just goes off the rails early. Whereas like, there's just something fucking irritating about pissing away a game like that.
Okay. I think my answer is Harry Redknapp playing for the draw against Aston Villa.
Yep. That's my actual answer. That made me so fucking angry. Like,
in a game that we should have won and finished above Arsenal, and instead we finished fourth behind Arsenal and lost out in the Champions League.
That isn't what made me mad about it. What made me mad about it is he didn't go for it. If he went for it and still drew, it was like, fine, whatever. But he put fucking Scott Parker on, man.
Yep.
Like, Scott Parker's not going to go score a fucking goal. Like, Scott Parker's there to help you with tidy possession. Like, God, that was so annoying. I think the angriest I've been, I'm trying to remember, AVB got like his shit rocked like twice in a row. Which was the second one? Was it Liverpool or City?
Liverpool.
I think Liverpool. Liverpool's like, when he got blown out by Liverpool, I was pretty furious. Because I really thought we were going to do something that year and kick on. And it just was like, that was where it was like, oh, the emperor has no clothes. This guy I gotten so invested in. You know, and I was friends with a particularly annoying Liverpool fan at the time who was at that game. And I was just very angry about the whole thing. It was like, cause I think it was just clear. It was like, we're starting, like, it was bad enough we had to start over without Bale. But it was just like, oh, we're have to start over again. Like, there's no way this guy can survive this. And it was a really frustrating, especially after like we just got blown out by City.
Yeah,
I think it was City. Was City the other one?
Yeah, it was City.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. I mean, I'm sure I have been madder during the Conte and Mourinho era, but I was also so deadened and numb. That, like,
it all kind of bled together. Like,
yeah, emotions just were all kind of muted in a sad stew of furious anxiety, sadness, whatever.
Like, were you even mad when the Southampton game happened under Conte? Like, I just remember the whole thing. It was like a very out-of-body experience. It was like, you know, you're just like floating by as there's like a car accident going on around you. And you're like, oh, this is interesting.
Like, yeah, I definitely feel like at some point I just lost the capacity for anger. Like, it was still there in the stew, but it was not the overriding emotion. I've been way angrier when we're good and we're stupid and when we're bad and we're just bad.
I think the moment, the last, when I got angry and really checked out on Conte, like, where it was just the last straw was the Milan game. Like, we've been so miserable all year. And then we didn't even fucking try against Milan in that home. It was home, I think. We played him in the second leg. And it was just like, we didn't even fucking bother. And it was like, you know, a lot of times, like, I think a lot of what fans are saying is, like, ridiculous. But, like, you know, when Conte put on that defensive sub late and Harry Kane was like, what the fuck are we doing? And Ryan Mason's, like, shrugging his shoulders at him. It was like one of those, like, oh, these guys are as dumb as we think they are. Like, he doesn't know anything. I don't know. Like, he's just a fucking coward. Like, that was probably the last moment. That was probably maybe the only moment. It, like, in that last season of Conte, because it was just this, like, slow burn of frustration and irritation, and then like that was a very easy match to get like angry at in a way that maybe it wasn't always easy to get angry at.
Yeah, I think there was like that was just the snuffing of the last glimmer of hope that like we could salvage something out of a terrible season, and it was there for the taking, and it turned out the road to the final would have been pretty comfortable had we beaten that game or beaten Milan.
I don't think we could have gotten to the final, but
no,
yeah,
but it's not like we were running up against. Yeah. Like, it's the kind of thing you could look at and be like, "Really, this is what we could have done?"
Yeah, you're in a Champions League semifinal. Oh, that's nice. Like, you know,
right?
Yeah, it was. God, that was annoying. I don't even know. Like, was there a moment under Mourinho where you got angry, or was the whole thing just like a slow burn? Like, I mean, obviously you were angry. I did a podcast with you every week back then, but like, you know, where it was just like, you're fucking throwing things, you know, like you're kicking the dog. Like, cause I don't remember. And obviously the pandemic has a lot to do with that, but like
the thing
I just remember. Yeah, go ahead.
The things that stick out to me, and I don't know if this is what was made me angriest in the moment, but the things that like I look back on, and I just remember like how crashing out of the Europa League, or maybe it was the Conference League
it was Europa League,
a team whose manager was in jail, and just like it's the fucking Europa League. Like, we should be able to be in this competition. Like, how have we squandered this that badly?
We squandered a 3-0 lead, even independent of, like, the losing to the guy in jail. We had a 3-0 lead going into that match.
Like, yeah, that makes me mad. Because I am a noted Europa League apologist. I enjoy that competition. I'm excited for our Thursday night games. I like European football when we're in it, whatever level it is. And I always feel like we should have the capacity to make a deep run in that competition, and we never fucking do. And that was pretty egregious. And then all of the Gareth Bale stuff is the other thing, where it just took so long and so much to get that man on the pitch. And when he was so good. And it was
imagine if Ange was our manager and we had Gareth Bale. Like, just like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, we'd win the league.
Yeah, but it's amazing thinking back, and I think a lot of it does have to do with the pandemic. It was like, there wasn't that moment where you wanted to, like, fucking jump into the screen. And I mean, there was that moment where you wanted to jump in the screen and strangle Mourinho, but just because he's Mourinho, like, there wasn't, it was just all this, like, base level of, like, frustration and awfulness. There wasn't this, like, it never came to a head.
I mean, I can't even point to, like, an individual match, because, again, I blocked so much of this out, but it's the general feeling of going up a goal, and then watching us sit back and slowly bleed away our advantage, and then concede one, concede two, and oh, there goes the game again, week in, week out. I don't even know which games that's referring to, but that was just felt like the general tenor, and doing that every time it happened, because it was like, why are we not pressing our advantage? Why are we not staying on the front foot? We're so bad defensively. Like, this is clearly not working. How are we still persisting with this every fucking time?
It was,
I don't know. Can we talk about something good?
Like, yeah.
Game was bad. Why are we wallowing in other bad memories? We're trying to encourage people to listen all the way through the podcast. Let's do a transition to good stuff.
Who is the worst Spurs player you've loved?
Besides Eric Lamella?
First of all, there's absolutely a worse Spurs player you've loved than Eric Lamella, like, who contributed much to Tottenham Hotspur. But, sure.
The worst player I love. I mean, you know, I think it would have to be older era of Tottenham when we were worse. I think my capacity to love a kind of bad cult figure and Ndombele aside has sort of waned as we've become good. I have way less time for the charmingly inept players on the squad.
Is it Ndombele?
Ndombele is really good.
He's not. He's demonstrably not good, Ben.
He's not really good at, like, the sport of football as we know and define it, but he is really good at things with a football at his feet.
So he is like a TikTok account. He's a really good TikTok account.
Yeah, he's
account.
A street baller. He is, you know, the guy, like, you know, nutmegging children in the playground. And it's like, yeah.
Okay, so Ndombele aside, who I think is your actual answer here.
No, he's good.
No, he's not. He's not. He was good for 1 year at Lyon, which should, like, tell you something. Like,
yeah, that we failed him.
Yeah, we failed him. I can't believe that guy showed up late to meetings this year. It's like, God, if you don't realize this is your last chance saloon, buddy.
It was a long drive-through to get Le Big Mac. Like, what do you want?
You mean a Royale with cheese? That was the problem. He kept ordering a Royale with cheese, and they didn't know what he was talking about. Putting Ndombele aside, which is, you know, a heavy lift, I'm surprised you didn't say Holtby.
No, I did not have, like, a deep abiding affection for Holtby. That was just a guy I thought was going to be a good signing and believed in. Like, he showed glimpses, but I don't know that I had a deep affection for him.
You saw his last goal for Spurs, I think.
You
in person.
Hated him so much that liked him just because you hated him.
Yeah, I know. That's why I thought he would be your answer. He was endemic of, like, or he just embodied, not endemic, he embodied the AVB era to me. And it was just so frustrating that, like, I was the only one who seemed to be getting angry with him, at least in, like, the circles of Spurs fans that I talked to. It was, like, driving me insane because he was very good in his first, like, cameo against Norwich. And then he was never good for us ever again. And it was really irritating to watch.
Okay, you go ahead.
No, please.
Oh, this just reminded me of Nabil Bentaleb, who's definitely another guy who was...
He's got to be your favorite worst player ever.
I mean, I just rooted for him so hard. I really liked his game. I thought it was just like a few being a left back away from like really turning it on.
He had a decent season. What was weird about Bentaleb is like Pochettino like sort of found a good use for him for a year, but also sort of realized like, boy, this guy's got a low ceiling. So he was committed to moving on from him very quickly. So like he never had that like long stretch of like, what the fuck is he doing in our team? You know what I mean? Like he was just like moved out very quickly.
Right. There wasn't enough time to get completely sick of him the way I did with a Winks or a yes. Brian Mason or whoever. I don't know. Who's your enfant terrible?
Soldado?
Not good.
Like, he was never good for us, but you always, like, God bless him, he tried. And, like, it was just hard to get angry at him because it was this, like, he was bad and it was, you know, it was like they bought a sure thing. Like, we went and bought a B-minus player who was going to get us, like, you know, we got, like, 20 plus goals a year in Spain for like 3 or 4 years in a row, like very like a solid. Decade. Yeah, like, you know, like you couldn't have bought a sure thing. And at a time where like, you know, buying a striker out of the Spanish league wasn't like a huge step down from what you were getting in England, and he just couldn't fucking do anything. And some of that wasn't his fault, but a lot of it was, and you know, but he never complained. He was never a bitch about it. It was just, you know, he was like, he tried, and it was like, there was something sort of like admirable in that, but it was probably Soldado.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think there's also guys like Fernando Llorente who, God
love
him.
Not bad.
Just never.
Did great for what we asked him to do. Fought the entire West Ham team, scored an important goal in the Champions League quarterfinal.
Exactly. Like, it's like, I don't even know how to categorize him. Like, this is not like a bad player who you like. It's like a limited player who was past his sell-by date, did what he was asked, real cult figure. Like, that's a kind of guy who's maybe meets the nominal definition, but I think is not really what we're talking about.
But yeah, because I think it's all about expectations. It's like, he was our backup striker, and he played well. Like, he did enough good things with us where it's like, fine, you're our backup striker. I don't have a lot of expectations for you, especially like an older one who's not developmental. You know, like, I think the answer for a lot of people would be like a Jermaine Genius type guy or a David Bentley, like guys who like really weren't very good for us, but like
nobody loved David Bentley.
Nobody
loves
highlights.
David Bentley.
Oh, well, we know one guy who loves David Bentley, but, you know, Willie doesn't count, I guess. So, but, you know, like, I think, like, Genius there's a versions of him where people are just like, oh, yeah, he was, you know, because I can think back to, like, he was always good against Arsenal. And, like, you know, there's that League Cup run, and, you know, you think about that. But, like, he was supposed to be a really good starting midfielder for us and just wasn't up to snuff for that, as opposed to, like, Llorente, who I don't think was great for Spurs, but, you know, was at least adequate in his role as a an aging backup striker.
Right. No, absolutely. And I'm trying to think of other guys in the Pochettino era, and it's hard because it was just a good team full of good
Chadley guys. Was like the worst guy who was really productive, I feel like.
Yeah, but I notably did not like Chadley.
Yes. Yes.
I am the Chadley hater. Even though most Spurs fans had a real soft spot for him, and like I've said before, I'm now more charitably disposed to a guy like that, and I wish I hadn't been such a hater. But yeah, I was a hater.
It's because he's not exactly the same, because I think we were getting tired of him for real reasons, but he's kind of like Bentaleb, where like he got shipped out before he really wore out his welcome.
Right. He had one great season where he was limited but highly productive, and then, you know, he kind of just sort of faded into the background and left.
Yeah, he wasn't sort of out there just like scuffing chances or wasting possession for like a whole year. Like, it was, we just moved on. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I feel like there's like a smart ass answer about someone on our current team, but it's eluding me. Suma. I don't know. Manor Solomon. You know, it is like four cameo appearances for Spurs.
I was very high. I mean, I was very excited about Bissouma earlier this year, and I pulled a 180 on that guy as quickly as he pulled a 180 on the pitch.
It's so hard to know what to think of him, though, because it's like, I mean, we talked about it, but it's like, you know, he's been hurt. It's a weird, you know, you go in and out of the team, but like, God, those first 10 matches, he was incredible. And now it's like, what happened to that guy? So.
Yep.
What is your, as we're talking about this, what is your favorite single game performance from a Spurs player? I mean, there's an easy answer for this, but I feel like we're not necessarily going to go there. So,
what? Am I supposed to talk about Lucas Moura at Amsterdam?
No, I was going to say Bale and Inter, but, you know, like, that's fine, too.
No, I mean, my favorite single game performance is, like, Dimitar Berbatov against Fulham playing a man down. Or maybe it was Bolton. See the fuck, I can't remember. A white team in, like, 2007. Where we played a man down, and he played as a hold-up striker by himself and ran the game. And now I'm so old, I can't remember if it was Fulham or Bolton. So I guess that doesn't count.
Yeah, we're getting really old.
Yeah. Single games. I don't know. What do you got?
I don't know if this holds up, like, if you went back and watched it, but in my memory, in that game we played Real Madrid in the Champions League, I think it was the group stage, like, Christian Eriksen. I just remember him. Yeah, Harry Winks. Yeah, that's it. I just remember Eriksen just, like, bossing that midfield, that, like, very good Real Madrid midfield, and it just being, like, especially he was doing it to, like, Luka Modric, and it just felt like such a revelation, and I was so happy watching it. Alternatively, like, I would say it was 10 minutes, not even, but, like, Gareth Bale against Manchester City, when he just, like, scored 3 goals on them in, like, 10 minutes or whatever it was. I just remember City wearing that maroon kit. And I remember being very impressed by that. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like Son against City in general, like, pick your,
yeah,
City,
there's
man.
So many.
Yeah. Pick them. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like
Kane against Chelsea in that 5-2 under Pochettino.
You know what it is? It's none of the stuff I said. It's Kane against City in Conte's first year. Like, that was so impressive what he did in that match.
Yeah.
If we're just going to name some guys and some matches,
my brain's going.
Van der Vaart against Inter, like, that is, like, one of, like, the things that for my formative experience as a Spurs fan. He was so fun in that match. Like,
that's a Bale match.
Well, I don't think, see, that's actually a weird thing. So that's actually a good discussion point, because I've always found it a little strange, and I do understand why, but I found it a little strange that, like, Spurs fans really, when they talk about Bale, it's always the at Inter where we were down like 4-0 or whatever, and he scores 3 goals and almost scores a 4th. To me, I thought that the return match at White Hart Lane was much more impressive. Like, where I don't think he scored in that match, but he just completely dominated Inter and was creating tons of shit. And, like, we just ran that game, and so much of it went through Bale. Like, that was the taxi for Micah. Well, I guess both games were the taxi.
They both were.
But he was putting Micah, I mean, he was destroying Micah all day in that game. And I still think the home match was the more impressive performance. Because,
well, obviously, we whipped the shit out of them and went on to, you know, have a very good Champions League campaign. But that, I don't know, the turnaround in that Inter game, the first one, was, excuse me, so special and so out of nowhere. Like, we're down 4-0. Like, we are humbled and outclassed. We don't belong in the Champions League at all. Like, this is the defending champions, and they, you know, humiliated us. And then Gareth Bale, this is a guy who, you know, had barely played until, like, the final stretch of the prior spring. Where, you know, he led victories against Arsenal and Chelsea back to back. And it was like, oh, this guy might be good. And that hat trick in the dying embers of getting our asses kicked to almost salvage a point on the road to the defending European champions was just like an unreal coming out party for this player. And I think for Spurs on the European stage to say, we might actually belong here. And I think the second game proved it. Like, but that first game was just like such a sit up and take notice moment.
I understand the sit up and take notice, but to me, the second game, and some of it's like the atmosphere at White Hart Lane is incredible. And like I said, like that is why it's one of my formative moments as a Spurs fan. Like watching that on TV was like something else. But the atmosphere was incredible. He did that to Inter, and they still couldn't stop him in the next match. You know, like a defensive manager like Benitez, like had no answers for it after he saw what he did. It was like a competitive game state as opposed to like, in my head, this probably isn't fair, but I just wrote off like, okay, well, that was really impressive what he did to Inter in Milan, but they were kind of taking their foot off the gas, and you know, the game wasn't really in doubt till pretty close to the end.
I understand that's not rational, but
I think there's something, but that's my point. I think there's something about like the way he played against them at what, and I understand it's on the road, but like in that atmosphere, the way he played when they knew it was coming, like he didn't catch anybody by surprise. He wouldn't catch anybody when the game was like, when they were down 3-4 nil or whatever. He just fucking demolished them when it was competitive, when there was shit on the line. And I just thought that was so impressive. Like, and the way he also like, it wasn't just the Gareth Bale show. He was drawing everyone. It was Modric. It was Van de Vaart. It was Crouch. He was drawing everybody into that game. I don't know. That's like one of my favorite games as a Spurs fan, watching what he did to them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I hate to say it, but that was your first season as a Spurs fan. And I think the weight of context around that first performance may have been...
You're probably right.
You're just like, okay, I watched a guy score 3 goals in a game we lost. Like, it's hard to really feel how significant it was to feel that good about losing that badly in that kind of game as a Spurs fan in that moment.
No, I totally get
you're
that.
You're right, and that the second game was better. We beat the brakes off of Inter, and Bale laid on 3 or 4 goals. Like, come on.
I just think like it's like when we talk about great Spurs performances, I always find it a little strange that that gets kind of overlooked, because I think both Bale in particular and the team as a whole, like I think that's a much more fun game to go revisit. Maybe because
absolutely the last 10 like, minutes of the first one. Yeah
I don't know, like other great, like, man, I don't know, this is fun to talk about. love thinking about some games. You know, I'll give him credit, that Arsenal game under Conte, like that was like maybe the most fun we've had in the new stadium. Like that was a fun day at the office. Like I wish it had the long lasting effects we all thought it did at the time, but yeah, that was a fun day at the office.
Yep. that did not prove to be the nail in Arteta's coffin.
And I'll say this, I'm going to remember that every time someone talks about like, oh, well, it's really important that you make the Champions League that year. It's like, all right. Like some team fucking sucks every year that should be good not to be the Champions League. Like, I'm going to be very wary of us getting shut out of anything after, you know, like that was supposed to be a dagger in Arsenal's heart, and clearly not.
And, you know, the flip side of that is it does really speak to being patient with a manager you believe in and letting him have the time to build something, because Arteta did not look like he was putting anything together for several years there. And it was like, why are they persisting with this guy? This is a joke. And, you know, again, now they're one of the best teams in the world. And, you know, that's a lesson to writing off a manager too quickly, I guess.
Unless it's ABB, and in which case, do it as fast as you can.
We'd seen enough.
Yeah, we've definitely seen enough. One last thing. What's the best experience you've had attending a football match?
Well, it hasn't been that many. And my
I understand. We're Americans. We're filthy Americans. But, I mean, you know, you have an MLS team. You know, you can.
I mean, I did see Atlanta United win the league in person.
Were you there when they clinched? Or
Yeah, well,
like the actual game.
MLS has a cup playoff structure.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that shows where I am. Yeah. Were you there for the actual
game? I was there for the final. I was there for that run.
And your last game as an Atlanta United fan?
Wasn't my last, but, you know, we beat MLS. It's over. I don't have to pretend to care about it anymore. That was very fun to just see a team win a championship in my backyard. It's hard to top. My favorite sporting memory is going to see Fluminense in the Copa Libertadores semifinals against Boca Juniors, where they came back and won. You know, it's hard to top the atmosphere in the Maracanã with like flares and smoke bombs going off everywhere and traffic stopping because on the way home, everybody has just gotten out of their cars and had an impromptu dance party in the street all over the city of Rio. Like, this is just a hard experience to top. Even zero investment in the team, it was just like being part of someone else's something really special was really cool. As a Spurs match, I've been to White Hart Lane once, and I saw us beat Bournemouth. I saw Vincent Janssen score a goal. I saw
that's not the most important thing you saw score that day. A goal. Talk about the most important thing you saw that day.
And I saw Jack Wilshere get hurt, and the crowd erupt into a impromptu chant of "He's done it again! He's done it again!" And that was, I think, the last of Jack Wilshere's career. So that's a highlight, also.
Yeah, I've enjoyed myself to the sort of football experience. Well, I mean, except for the DC United. Well, I don't know. Even seeing DC United with the Raccoons is like, you know, there's something special about that. But like, I don't know. I've enjoyed the atmospheres at the games I've gone to. I feel like I have like never been to like a truly great football match. Like, I keep seeing Spurs draw West Ham. At least like the last time I went, I saw Spurs like King got a last minute penalty to draw the match and had to score on the rebound, which was at least exciting. You know, probably that match is probably my favorite. I got to go to White Hart Lane. I got to go to a bar with a "Do Not We Here" sign outside of it afterwards, my friend Alan. And I got to go with my dad, who, you know, I grew up, he really made me an Orioles fan. And, you know, that was special to me growing up, and to see him sort of adopt Tottenham because they were my team, and being able to go with him, that was a real, you know, special experience, and I really enjoyed it. And I hope to, you know, in a few years, take him and my son to a game at the new White Hart Lane. So that's probably my most special one. I don't have as good a one as you do, but, you know, it's always like, you know, you go to Betis or you go to like, you know, Sporting or whatever, and it's just like, oh, this is a nice atmosphere, but I haven't seen like a truly great match, which is like, you know, a little bit of a shame, but one of these days, I guess.
Sounds like you need to become a NYCFC fan.
Yeah, I think we're talking about great football matches. I don't think we're going to find that at NYCFC, Ben.
Well, sorry. You need to be better traveled, I guess.
Yeah, maybe we need to move to another city.
The worst football game I saw was Spurs draw Liverpool 0-0 on a 100-degree day in Baltimore.
Yeah, but the good thing about that game is neither of us remember much of it. Between heat stroke and alcohol, we were both pretty fucked up and don't remember.
That's true.
Thing. The only thing I remember of it, and it's from secondhand accounts, is Charlie Adam trying to injure Gareth Bale.
I don't remember anything of that.
Yeah, I don't remember it actually happening. I just remember people complaining about it afterwards. There is like videos of us like marching to the match that you could find on the internet, which is always pretty. I always get a kick out of when someone shares it with me.
I will say that was a really special moment. That was the first Spurs match I ever attended, and getting to just be in a sea of Spurs fans in Baltimore of all places, and just, you know, seeing just that many Spurs fans doing the march, singing all the chants and whatever. It was just like the first time I really got to feel that in-person connection with the club. And that was, I mean,
that was really cool. Cause it was this like sort of online distant experience. And like, I don't think it was the first time we met, but like we hung out that weekend it was one of the first times we met. And like, I met a couple other Spurs fans that, you know, I'd only known online. It felt like a very tangible, real thing to me in a way that like, you know, maybe it hadn't entirely felt like before. Like that was a really cool week. Certainly, I would say hanging out in that Spurs bar, which like we later found out was like run by some like neo-Nazi piece of shit, but like we didn't know that at the time. So like hanging out at that Spurs bar that was like wall to wall, like Spurs fans hanging off the rafters, that like, that was a really cool experience, and also like much better than the game itself.
Yeah, it just really brought the experience of following this team from afar on the internet through TV into physical reality for the first time in a way that was, yeah, really, really special.
Yep. Maybe they'll, well, probably not, because Under Armour is going to be out of business in a few years, but maybe they'll come back to Baltimore again one day and we can all hang out again. On that note, I think it's time to wrap it up before we think too hard about how we're going to play against Luton. Ben, where can people find you on the internet?
Don't find me. I'll find you.
Okay, fair enough. You can find me on Twitter at Skipjack0079. You can find me on Blue Sky at Plain Old Skipjack. Don't forget to follow our podcast at WDR Podcast. That's WDR as in Wheeler Dealer Radio. For Ben, for Brian, and of course for Brett Rainbow, I've been your host, Greg. Come on, you Spurs, and enjoy your lunch.